Welcome to University Showcase. I'm Megan Kamrick. Climate change is not theoretical in the Southwest. It's here, and it's having serious impacts in our communities. Professor David Gutzler says we have no choice but to adapt and incorporate this reality into our policies statewide. Gutzler is a climatologist with the Department of Earth and Planetary Sciences at the University of New Mexico. He's this year's recipient of the annual Community Engaged Research Lectureship Award, which honors scholars whose work is academically relevant but also affects the wider community. Gutzler's work has been incorporated into seasonal forecast predictions about summer rainfall by the National Weather Service. He's also a lead author on the 2013 Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change Fifth Assessment Report. That document was the main source for the 2015 Paris Agreement on Climate Change. Dave Gutzler, thank you for joining us on University Showcase.
My pleasure. Nice to be here.
Do you mind just giving us the basics of how climate change works?
We always start with observations. We know that temperature is increasing just from our global temperature records. We know and have known since the late 50s, that greenhouse gases, specifically carbon dioxide concentrations, are going up. And we know what the effect of increasing CO2 and any greenhouse gas is on the surface temperature. That's real basic physics. That when you add greenhouse gases to the atmosphere, then more of the heat Earth is radiating out to space gets absorbed and re-radiated back to the surface and thereby heats the surface up more. And so all the pieces are there to explain why the temperatures are warming up. And what we've been able to do since these pieces were put together is to use climate models to demonstrate convincingly that you can't explain the observed increase in global temperatures without including the effects of increasing greenhouse gases.
Now, the climatological record has shown variations throughout hundreds of years, correct? Why is it different now?
The climate is always changing. That's a sort of a truism that really is true. So it's not enough to correlate increasing greenhouse gases and increasing temperatures and turn that correlation into a cause and effect relationship. So just because all those things are going up in tandem doesn't prove that one is the cause and the other is the effect. So we use climate models to assess the different ways that climate could be changing. So we can take climate models and make the sun brighter or dimmer in a way that's been observed over the course of the past 200 years. We can take the greenhouse gases and increase them as has been observed or keep them steady. We can allow volcanoes to erupt or not. And when you look at those models and carry out these experiments, you find out that the models are capable of generating something very close to the observed warming trend of the 20th century. But you only get the right answer if you include the greenhouse gas effect. So without increasing greenhouse gases, as has been observed over the past 150 years, you don't reproduce the observed warming in climate models.
So you feed into the model what you're observing in terms of the emissions of greenhouse gases.
Correct.
Okay. So obviously, when we're talking about greenhouse gases, these are human-caused.
That's a great question. So we know that CO2 and methane concentrations have gone up dramatically over the course of the 20th century. Establishing where those gases came from is trickier, but certainly, especially with respect to CO2, there are various means that have shown quite conclusively that the increase in greenhouse gases that's about a factor of a third since the Industrial Revolution really has come from fossil fuel burning primarily. So there are geochemical ways to determine that by looking at carbon isotopes. We have data on emissions, and we can show that the rate of change of emissions from year to year correlates with the increase in observed CO2. And we can look at the fact that there's a little bit more CO2 in the northern hemisphere than there is in the southern hemisphere because most of the people live in the northern hemisphere, and that's where most of the CO2 emissions take place, and it takes a year or two for those emissions to mix down into the southern hemisphere.
What assumptions, then, do you have to make when you're doing this work? I heard in your talk for the Community Engaged Research Lectureship the word assumption a lot, not unlike maybe economists. When they assume models, maybe that's not fair.
Yeah, Rupert Murdoch once said that economists were created to make weather forecasters look good.
That's not a fair comparison. But you're assuming certain things. I just want to give people a sort of a snapshot because I feel like the realm that you work in, the things that you are not certain about, seem small compared to the larger things you are certain about. Some have exploited those smaller uncertainties to cast aspersions on the larger certainties.
There are a lot of quantitative uncertainties, and certainly climate models are far from perfect. In particular, there are a number of climate models run by climate centers worldwide, and if you feed the same greenhouse gas scenario into each of those different models, you'll get a different answer coming out of each of those models, but not a completely different answer. It will just certainly in terms of temperature, the models all warm up when you increase greenhouse gas concentrations. They warm up at different rates because the sensitivity of each model to increasing the greenhouse effect depends on what we call climate feedbacks associated with uncertain clouds and things like that. But they're all warming up, but at different rates. They produce somewhat different precipitation projections. The broad scale changes in precipitation aren't that different, but the local details certainly are. And then finally, as we make climate change projections, we're including the effects of just natural variability of the sort we've seen over the past few centuries. And so even the same model, if you give it slightly different initial conditions, just like a weather forecast model, will produce different answers going farther into the future for individual years. In other words, random weather happens differently, even in the same model, given the same forcing, but the overall trends aren't that different. And then finally, if we're making climate change projections, we have to make some assumption about how much greenhouse gas concentrations will change in the future. And that is not so much a science uncertainty as a policy uncertainty. We don't know whether or how much the world community will choose to mitigate greenhouse gas emissions. So there's uncertainty in terms of rates of change associated with what greenhouse gas emissions scenario we choose.
This is University Showcase on KUNM. I'm Megan Kamrick, and I'm speaking with Professor David Gutzler, a climatologist with the Department of Earth and Planetary Sciences at UNM, who's this year's recipient of the annual Community Engaged Research Lectureship Award. What does warming look like in New Mexico?
Well, first, I would say, not without recourse to models, just in observations, we see that the temperature in particular is changing here rapidly. So over the past half century or so, we've seen 2.5 to 3 degrees Fahrenheit of warming averaged across the state of New Mexico, which is a very rapid rate of warming. If you talk to anybody who's lived here for most of that time, usually they have their own anecdote about how it just seems a whole lot warmer, or it used to be a whole lot colder, and they're right.
It used to snow before Thanksgiving.
Yeah, all that stuff. And it's true. It really was very significantly colder back in the late 20th century. And that change continues unabated. Lots of interannual variability, but an upward trend that really sticks out in the data. A climate model that is forced by increasing greenhouse gases generally will take that observed trend and just extrapolate it out into the future for the rest of the century at some uncertain rate. So in fact, a sort of a middle of the road assumption for what greenhouse gas concentrations might look like going out for the rest of the century basically takes the observed trend that we've seen over the past half century and just carries it on at the same, roughly the same rate, about 7 degrees Fahrenheit per century, is a sort of middle of the road projected rate of change of temperature across New Mexico, which is enormous. That would make the climate really different. That's a lot of warming. It would decimate the snowpack. It would probably cause most of our high elevation forests to die off. The climate simply won't sustain them. And there would be major climatic changes all across the state if anything like that were to happen over the next 70 or 80 years.
You mentioned in your lecture that if you want a model for what – if that trend continues of what we look like in 2100 is El Paso. And I'm sorry, Albuquerque looks like El Paso.
Yeah. So if we take a projected temperature trend like that and we don't change the precipitation too much and we ask where can we look that has a temperature and precipitation that's significantly warmer, 5 to 7 degrees Fahrenheit warmer with roughly the same precipitation, El Paso is the answer. So the border region is our climate future under that sort of middle of the range climate change projection. And I would add that with a climate like that, we probably ought to expect biota that look roughly like the border region. So that's a region that basically doesn't support trees. So that sort of desert environment is where we're headed over, you know, the next 50, 60, 70 years, again, depending on the rate of change that occurs, which in turn probably depends largely on greenhouse gas concentrations.
Is it possible in any of the models, and maybe it doesn't matter if it keeps getting that much warmer, that we would get wetter?
Sure. So most models project that it will get considerably wetter up near the Canadian border and considerably drier in Mexico, especially in the winter. So a robust climate change projection is for winter storms basically to move north in the northern hemisphere. It's think of the tropics expanding poleward, and so we become somewhat more tropical in terms of temperatures and less wintry in the winter.
Does that mean New Mexico could get wetter? Probably not.
Probably not. Mm-hmm. But in fact, the transition between drier to the south and wetter to the north in most climate models takes place somewhere around Colorado and Wyoming. But there's uncertainty there. That's now we're getting to the parts of these projections where the uncertainty goes up. And determining exactly where that transition from a drier subtropics to a wetter high latitude regime, where that takes place depends on the model.
So if, given some of the uncertainty in these models, is that a reason to not take steps to change, for example, how we store water here in places like giant reservoirs, which was done almost 100 years ago when the climate was different?
Right. If we want to think about how to deal with these projections, which are not definitive, nobody is in a position of specifying how precisely how warm it's going to be during a certain year or what the precipitation is going to look like. The way to approach it is via some sort of risk management perspective where we assume that the projections have a certain amount of uncertainty, but we try to minimize the risk associated with a spectrum of possible changes. And any kind of approach like that will tell us that we must plan for the high probability of reduced stream flows, among other things, and a more arid Southwest in general. So here in this part of the world, I think that, you know, managing water resources is one of the things we will have to plan for in a much more careful way than we've done so far. And that's not easy because we have an existing water infrastructure to work with. We have a whole set of laws and interstate agreements and water allocations that have been made. So our ability to just turn on a dime and plan for a drier future is tricky and limited. But we've got to get started. We would be foolish from a risk management perspective to not start planning for a drier future.
Do you feel like we are, as a country, as a state, or as a country, we are planning or mitigating against some of these right now? I mean, this is politically a giant hot potato. Is there planning taking place?
Yes, is the quick answer. There are two components to dealing with climate change. One is adapting to changes, and that is an absolute requirement because we already see changes happening. And we, and then the second part, which is harder, is mitigating future emissions to try to minimize future climate change. So with regard to adaptation, water management, some things have been implemented. So cities across the West have done a really great job in conserving water and using droughts to their advantage in terms of convincing the population to conserve water, much more so than was the case back in the 20th century. And those measures need to be applauded and extended. So that's ongoing. Where we're having trouble is in thinking about mitigating future emissions. That's harder. That's an energy issue more than a water issue. And that brings up all kinds of socioeconomic and political questions about how we move away from fossil fuels toward a less carbonized energy future.
That's certainly relevant for New Mexico, as we've seen in the Northwest New Mexico, the move away from coal-fired power plants. Communities who rely on those to provide jobs and other economic opportunities they're not happy about, much like Appalachia or, you know, the Permian Basin in southeastern New Mexico, where we're all happy that we – I should say many people are happy that we have more revenues now in the state because of the boom in oil production there, which funds schools and hospitals and universities like UNM. So how do we do what we need to do environmentally – and not leave people behind who rely on those industries?
That is the major challenge I see facing us. I personally think that technologically a move toward the utter dominance of renewables is quite feasible. I don't see any reason why we couldn't do that aggressively. But I don't know how we do that in our socioeconomic system without really leaving behind communities and states that depend on fossil fuel extraction for their livelihoods and a lot of their revenues. I don't think we need to be wishy-washy about being happy that there's an oil boom this year. I'm happy that the state is in a better position economically. The concern is that over the long term, that's utterly unsustainable. Because,
well, global oil prices are going down.
And I see a future, an inevitable future, that where we move away from fossil fuels. It's got to happen. That's what the climate models tell us. If we want to avert real climatic catastrophe, we have to move away from fossil fuel energy rapidly. And I think it's inevitable that that will happen. Rapidly or not, it's going to happen. And so we should already be thinking long term about how New Mexico as a state is going to deal with that.
Do you think institutions like the University of New Mexico have a role to play in that?
Sure. We would be foolish not to play a big role. I have been concerned as an academic that the university doesn't play a more prominent role. I think it should, in terms of advising policymakers on the, you know, technocratic aspects of the policies that they're developing. And so there's all the reason in the world for institutions like UNM to be quite proactive in exploring various possibilities, you know, within the academic realm. It's much easier for us to do that than almost anybody else. I can say things as a tenured professor that a lot of politicians might not want to say. And I don't think I'd be serving the public well if I were shy about talking about reality as I see it.
If you just tuned in, this is University Showcase on KUNM. I'm Megan Kamrick. I'm speaking today with Professor David Gutzler, a climatologist with the Department of Earth and Planetary Sciences at UNM, who is this year's recipient of the annual Community Engaged Research Lectureship Award. You have made it part of what you do, not just to teach in the university, but you go out to communities around the state and give talks about climate change and climate in New Mexico. I'm just curious what kind of reception you get, because we have this idea now in the last 10 or 15 years that there's been this huge retrenchment among some people to not believe what you're saying. Do you find that when you go out? Are people interested, engaged in this?
Well, you've made two statements,
okay.
and they could both be true.
Okay.
People can be interested even if they don't believe all of it. And so what I have encountered universally across the state is that people are totally fascinated and very receptive to hearing what the scientific community has to say through my perspective. So I've never received anything other than just a fabulous reception at talks all across the state. Now, having said that, I've been heckled a few times, but that goes with the territory. Less so now than, say, 10 or 15 years ago, but still, there are plenty of what we might politely call skeptics out there, but that's part of the dialogue here, is that I need to try to tell people what it is we do at the university and what I and my students have been working on. And my sense is that people want to hear more from us at the university about what we're doing and how it affects their lives. And there's a lot going on here at UNM that really does affect the lives of everyday New Mexicans, and we need to do a much better job telling our story.
You're so optimistic. I wonder, how do you stay optimistic in the face of the data that you're looking at every day?
Because I like to think long term. And I realize it's easier for me to maintain a long-term perspective than lots of people. I'm not trying to meet a payroll this month or this year. I'm not trying to win the next election next year or 2 years from now or whenever. But long-term, I see every reason for optimism that we can move away from fossil fuels and put ourselves into a future that's much more resilient to the sorts of climate variability and change that we see, and sustainable over the long run. Now, it might not happen as quickly. It won't happen as quickly as many people would like. There's going to be a lot of climate change that happens that's already baked into the system. Bad things will happen, like we've been seeing in California this fall. But over the long term, I maintain a pretty high level of optimism that we can do this. Among the things I tell my students is that, you know, if we can convert the climate change problem from a political problem to an engineering problem, then we can take care of this. Now, that's not good enough, because even solving the engineering problem doesn't address the matter of sharing the benefits of renewables across all of society, including the parts of society that depend on fossil fuel extraction now. That's huge, and I don't know how to address that. But there are plenty of smart people around who ought to be thinking about that as we move forward.
I hear you saying, going back to what you said about there are things happening at state levels, at local levels, but we're also living in a giant system. Some naysayers are saying, why should we do anything if emissions continue to go up in India and China as they build more coal-fired power plants, even if our emissions don't? Does it matter if we make small personal decisions, citywide decisions, county decisions, state decisions?
Absolutely, yes. And the reason is that those decisions will inevitably filter up and affect the federal government. I mean, there's no getting around the fact that the current administration is a complete disaster in terms of anything in terms of long-term planning, and in particular, long-term environmental policy. The Trump administration is based on falsehood and denial and delusion, and there's just nothing positive to say about it. But I think that's short-term. We could fall behind the curve internationally over the short term. But, you know, I think that I won't get this quite right, but Winston Churchill once said something along the lines of that Americans can be counted on to do the right thing after they've tried everything else. And we're probably in the everything else stage right now. But again, thinking long term, we won't have a choice. It's a maybe a bleak basis for optimism, but I think the international community is moving toward renewable energy and a decarbonized energy system. And we, as Americans and as New Mexicans, can choose to help be ahead of that curve, or we can fall behind. That's the choice we face.
So I have a friend who is convinced that this is going to be an unlivable place in 10, 20, 30 years. So she's already making plans to move to part of the country where she thinks climate effects will be mitigated, and sort of have a compound of, I know this sounds crazy saying this, because she also thinks that, you know, society in general is going to break down partially because of climate change. So should we stay and fight for a place like New Mexico, or should we start making our exit plans now?
You know, I get asked that question with mm-hmm. some frequency. The question is, you know, where should I move? We face some water challenges here for sure, and it is almost certainly going to be warmer here than it is now and was a few decades ago. But with those caveats, I don't see New Mexico turning into an uninhabitable place. Plenty of people live in Phoenix and El Paso and Ciudad Chihuahua and places farther south where it is hotter and drier. So I still live here, but I do think we need to have a real serious discussion about how we husband our resources wisely in a new climate, in a changing climate that is becoming drier. There are lots of difficult decisions and choices that I think we'll be faced with. There are lots of challenges associated with adapting old laws and infrastructure to a new climate. But I'm optimistic that these are things we can manage if we confront the risks that we face in an honest way.
All right. Well, Dave Gutzler, thank you so much for coming and talking with us.
Thank you. My pleasure.
That was Professor David Gutzler, a climatologist with the Department of Earth and Planetary Sciences. He is this year's recipient of the annual Community Engaged Research Lectureship Award. And you can find a link to his lecture, The Science and Politics of Climate Change, Tales of a Turbulent System, at KUNM.org. That's also where you can find this interview and all our past interviews. Thanks to Associate Professor David Bashwerner for our theme music. I'm Megan Kamrick. Thanks for listening to University Showcase.